So today we are celebrating the glorious appearance day of Srimati Radharani. So we'll be speaking about Srimati Radharani's position and some of the pastimes in her exhibition of different bhavas or emotions. Of course, Srimati Radharani exhibits the highest platform of bhava, which is called Maha Bhava, which means great emotions or unlimited emotions. Omagana Timirandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yenatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So first a little bit about Radharani's ontological position, that means who she is. She, of course, Prabhupada described she is the feminine counterpart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Krishna, of course, is the supreme male, and Radharani is the supreme female. And sometimes it's described Radha and Krishna are one, but they became two for the sake of enjoying pastime. So when we're talking about became two, it's not a question of the time sequence. You know, like you say, there was a temple created here in 1985, right? So before that, there was not a temple. Or at least there were some people living in the woods chanting Hare Krishna. So when we say Radha and Krishna became two for the sake of enjoying us, it doesn't mean at a certain particular time. It's an eternal fact. Does everyone understand that? So it's not that... Anyway, so I think you understand that point. So Prabhupada said Radharani is the feminine counterpart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and being the feminine counterpart, she is more compassionate than Krishna is. Krishna has... He makes many demands, such as Sarva Dharma Parichaya Mamekam Sharanam Braja, and he kills a lot of people. And there's no evidence of Radharani killing anybody. Plenty of evidence of Krishna killing people. Krishna even says in the Gita, what? Mitru Sarva Haras Chaham. I am all devouring death. And he exhibits the universal form where all the soldiers and all the personalities, everybody's rushing into the universal form's mouths and being devoured and demolished. But Radharani doesn't do that. Radharani is very, very sweet and compassionate. Of course, you do have Radharani's expansions, such as Durga Devi, who is doing a lot of interesting things to the living entities. Like Prabhupada describes it, Durga Devi sits on a tigress and she has the trident. And with the trident, of course, that means there's three tips to the trident. There's the threefold miseries, adiatmic, adibodhic, and adidaivic, miseries from the living entities, other living entities, miseries from the body and mind, and miseries from the material nature in general. So that's Radharani's expansion, Durga Devi. And in this material world, people are worshipping Durga Devi for material things. We don't worship Radharani for material things. We worship Radharani for pure devotional service. And in fact, when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we are crying out for Radharani before we are crying out for Krishna. That's Hare. The Hare, of course, as Prabhupada says, and we know this quite well, that's the evocative form. And in the evocative form, evocative means to call out, to vocalize, just like we have the word in English, vocalize. So it's calling out, oh, Radharani, please engage me in the service of Krishna. So we're asking for the service of Krishna. So chanting means you're asking for serving Krishna, but to take shelter under Radharani's lotus feet. And of course, in Radhastami, we do reveal the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. In all of the days, Prabhupada said, the feet of Radharani are covered, the deity's feet like that. And devotees in Braj are simply aspiring to be the servants of Radha. And that's why they're always chanting Radhe, Radhe, Radhe Sham, Shami Lade, Shami Lade, Radhe, Radhe. Some of you who've been to Braj know this chant. So that is Srimati Radharani's position. Now, as the greatest devotee of the Lord, she also controls the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore she's known as Madan Mohan Mohini. That means the attractor or the bewilderer. Mohini basically means more than just attracting. It means to bewilder someone. Just so you have the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mohini Murti. That means the Murti or the form that bewilders everybody, the bewildering form. That's what Mohini Murti means. So you have Madan Mohan Mohini. So you have the person who bewilders the person who attracts Cupid, which is really interesting. And that's Radharani, because of her devotion to Krishna. So she is simply thinking, this is real love. She is simply thinking, how can I please Krishna? And she is willing to literally go to hell, to suffer, whatever is required, as stated in the last verse of the Shikshastaka prayer by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace, you may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me, but you're completely free to do anything and everything. And you don't find such expressions of love in this world where the wife would say to the husband, you're completely free to be a debauchee, which is basically the way Prabhupada translated this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can be a debauchee. Debauchee means basically running around with other ladies. That's what debauchee means. But whatever you do, you'll remain my worshipful Lord unconditionally. I'll just be focused on it, just try to please you. So this is real love. And Krishna, of course, is also focused on Radharani in the same way, just trying to please her. And even when Krishna does things that apparently displease Radharani, like we mentioned the other day when Krishna made believe that he was thinking of Chandravali, who is Radharani's so-called competitor, it's simply he's doing that to please her. Because Radharani enjoys her mood of man. Man means anger. Just like when we have playful anger. Like yesterday, for example, I was playing with Badri. I don't know if you know who Badri is. Badri is Ananda's son. So I was playing with him, and I was tying him up, like Damodar. Tying him up with ropes around his wrists, and tying him to my staircase, throwing pillows at him. And he was getting really angry. And I was getting angry too, so... But he enjoyed it. He's thinking, when can I associate with that sannyasi again? He was thinking, those other sannyasis, they're too serious for me. So in other words, there's a playful enjoyment of anger even in this world. Sometimes in sporting games. Of course, sporting games are not so enjoyable. It's just like obnoxious. Even I was just reading that in hockey, ice hockey, they have one position in ice hockey called the enforcer. That means someone who goes out and beats everyone else up. Horrible, isn't it? So people are enjoying watching that. I mean, this is, of course, in the material world, that's the mode of ignorance, where you enjoy seeing someone get beat up. Watching a hockey game means basically you're in the mode of ignorance, or football, or rugby, or any of these games. Not that I wish to discourage anyone. But in the spiritual world, the same thing that was obnoxious and most ignorant becomes just very, very blissful. You know, there's anger and jealousy. We even have jealousy in the spiritual world. Like here we say that someone is turning green with jealousy. And in the spiritual world, they're enjoying that. You know, Radharani is feeling very jealous of Chandravali. And Chandravali is feeling jealous of Radharani. However, Chandravali doesn't exhibit man or anger because she is submissive. Radharani is mom, or that means left-handed gopi, and she is not submissive. And Krishna enjoys that non-submissiveness much more. In the material world, it's the opposite. You know, if someone has a wife and she's very submissive, it's very enjoyable because she's all day long rolling chapatis and cleaning and doing what she's supposed to do. And she only speaks when spoken to. And then in the material world, you have a unsubmissive wife, it's just like you have all these words like what, nag and henpecked, right? And you have a picture in your mind a hen, I mean female chicken just pecking someone. I don't know if you ever see the female chicken, but it's so descriptive, that particular description. It's so like pictorial, henpecked. He's henpecked. But in the spiritual world, we also say that Krishna is henpecked by Radharani. So Krishna is controlled by Radharani. The material world is not nice if you're controlled like that. So, anyway, contrasting the material world with the spiritual world. So Radharani, actually, Radha, Aradhya means to serve. She who serves. And Radharani's name is not mentioned specifically in the Bhagavatam because it's described that Shukadeva Goswami was Radharani's parrot ontologically, and he would have become unable to complete the Srimad Bhagavatam had he recited or said Radharani's name, and then poor Maharaj Parikshit would have been left there in the lurch without the Srimad Bhagavatam being completed. But Radharani is mentioned there, Aradhya, she who worships, she who is the best worshiper of Krishna. You know, indirectly, without mentioning her name, she's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. And she's mentioned, of course, directly in many of the Puranas. And sometimes people ask, you know, where do you get in the Vedic literature the name Radharani? And many of the Puranas, like the Vishnu Purana and the Padma Purana, what we call the Sattvika Puranas. We know the Puranas are divided into three categories: Sattvika, Rajika, and Atami, Tamas. That means the passionate, good, or the ignorant. Right. Not that the Puranas are ignorant, but they're just mainly dealing with people who are different modes of nature. They're meant for ignorant people. I mean, just like you have different books for studying. Like if you're a child and you're learning how to read, you're going to get kindergarten books. I mean, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And so there's different grades of presentation of knowledge for people according to where they're at materially, so what to speak of spiritually. So, anyway, so in the Sattvika Purana is Radharani's name, but not in the Bhagavata Purana. Radharani's name is mentioned. So she is well known in the Vedic literatures. And so, let us read about some of the bhavas of Srimati Radharani. Actually, first I could mention about Radharani's appearance from the Lita Madhava. I have the whole play here, the Lita Madhava, but I don't have time to read it right now. If we have time at the end of class, I can start reading it. But this is just the summary from the Lita Madhava. Radharani, of course, she's eternally associated with Krishna, but just like Krishna appears to be born in a certain time, Radharani appears to be born in a certain time. So it's described that Brahma blessed Mount Vindhya. Because Mount Vindhya was very envious. Mountains have personalities. You got that? Prabhupada said even clouds have personalities. Any entity that undergoes these six changes of birth and then growth, maintenance, byproducts, dissolution, and death, that's considered to be a living entity, has consciousness. So the earth has consciousness, that's Bhumi, and the individual mountains have consciousness. So Vindhya was very envious of the Himalayas, the Vindhya Mountains. And why was that Vindhya envious of the Himalayas? Because the Himalayas had given birth to Durga. Durga is sometimes called Himavati. I mean, she was born from the Himalayas. Of course, another time the Himalayas gave birth to a rat, but that's a different story. That everybody was waiting for the Himalayas to give birth, and all of a sudden a rat ran out. Anyway, but the Himalayas gave birth to Durga, and Durga is married to Lord Shiva. And so, wow. So Vindhya was thinking, I got to keep up, keeping up with the Joneses, keeping up with the mountains. I have to keep up with Mount Himalaya, with the Himalayan mountains. So Lord Brahma blessed Mount Vindhya to have a son-in-law who would defeat Lord Shiva. In other words, you'll get a better son-in-law than the Himalayas got, because the Himalayas' son-in-law was Shiva. So he blessed him like that. And Vindhya continually was like a little proud. This is a really interesting story from the Mahabharata, that one time Bindra tried to defeat the Meru Mountains, Mount Meru, and he became so big. And so Agastya Muni, in order to curb down his pride, was heading to the south, and he said to Mount Bindra, because Mount Bindra was offering obeisances. When you offer obeisances, you're not as tall as you are previously. So he said to Mount Bindra, don't get up until I return. And he never returned. So Mount Bindra was not so big. So in one sense, we find that Radharani was on Mount Bindra, considered the daughter of Mount Bindra. And after Radharani appeared, we have personality of Putana, who kidnapped Radharani, and because Kamsa told Putana, his good friend, the witch lady, poison witch. So he told Putana to kill all the young boys and kidnap the girls. He had given Putana that instruction. And the reason he told Putana that was that Durga, when she appeared before Kamsa, with the eight arms and everything like that, when Kamsa attempted to throw her against the wall or kill her like that, she told Kamsa that all these sakis are born too, that are going to be associated with the person who's going to kill you. So Kamsa became extremely envious. So after Putana had stolen Radharani and some of the other gopis, Bindra's priest chanted some demon-killing mantras. And some of the girls fell off, and Radharani was actually able to be saved at that time. Another explanation of Radharani's appearance is from Garga Muni. I think it's from the Garga Samhita. Said Radha appeared from Vrishabhanu's chest, from the chest of Vrishabhanu, because she's called Vrishabhanu Nandini. That means the daughter of Vrishabhanu. But she was transferred by Yogamaya into Kirtida's womb, and sent from the chest. Very interesting, from the heart. When we talk about chest, we're talking about the heart. Radha appeared from the heart, because Vrishabhanu is the eternal father of Srimati Radharani, and during Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, he appeared as Pundarik Vijaniti. And Lord Chaitanya was always calling Pundarik Vijaniti, oh father, because of that relationship. So when Putana was killed, Yogamaya, so Radha was still there with Putana, so when Putana was killed by Krishna, Yogamaya took Radha and five other gopis and placed them in the proper place. You understand? So there's many different explanations of Radharani's appearance. But this is from the Lalita Madhava. Very interesting. Very, very interesting description. And so Radharani appeared in the place in Braj called Ravel. Now, I know that's a little controversial if we speak to the people from Barshana. If you go to Barshana, they'll show you that this is where Radharani appeared. And I don't argue with them. One time I tried, it didn't work. But the acharyas, we're talking about Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and the other disciplic descendants of the acharyas describe that Radharani appeared in Ravel. And that makes sense, too. Because Ravel is on the eastern side of the Jamuna. And guess what else is on the eastern side of the Jamuna? Anybody else can guess? It's a place called Gokul. Gokul is where? Who appeared in Gokul? Krishna appeared in Gokul. So, obviously, Radharani and Krishna would appear in a place that was very close. Because when Radharani appeared, she was born blind. The reason she was born blind was that when Krishna and Radharani were in the spiritual world, Krishna said, Radharani, we want you to come to this material world so we can enact our pastimes. And Radharani said, I'm not going there. I have to see the face of so many rascals. And Krishna said, let's make a deal. He said, the first person you will see is me. And so Radharani necessarily was born blind without any sight. So everybody was worried, because it's really not considered so auspicious to have a blind child. So, but Narada Muni said, the Vrishabhanu, you should still have the name-giving ceremony and do all the big formalities. And Vrishabhanu was thinking, but it's really not that auspicious to have a blind child like this. So then what happened is they held it on Narada Muni's behest, and Krishna came, of course, with Yashoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj, and Krishna and Radharani were somehow climbing on the same lap. And as soon as Radharani smelled that it was Krishna, because Krishna has a certain scent, it's described in the past times that when Jatila and Kutila are trying to discover Radharani with Krishna, they say sometimes, I smell the smell of a lion. Hari. You understand? The smell of Hari is here. And that also means lion. And so, but it also means Krishna, because Krishna has a specific scent. Just like Tulsi Devi has a specific scent. And so Krishna, you know, when you come in contact with Krishna, you'll know him by your nose. You won't even have to see him. Because, anyway, I don't know what that scent is. I mean, I'm just saying, repeating the words of the Acharyas. So when Radharani smelled Krishna, then her blindness went away and she opened her eyes and she saw Krishna for the first time. And that's love. And just like we have in this material world, I don't have eyes for anyone else but you. You ever hear that before? I only have eyes for you. It's kind of silly. But, so Radharani, talking about love song, you know, that's what, if you hear about these things, you won't be attracted to these love songs, these soap operas, Bollywood films, whatever. Because there's so much, you know, intense romantic descriptions in the Vedic literatures about the love between Radha and Krishna. And then you'll just be thinking, I mean, be looking at your husband and wife and thinking, you know, I'll do my duty, but, you know, this is not exciting anymore. So, anyway. So Radharani saw Krishna. So getting back to the point about Radharani appearing in Rabal. So obviously, they were close together, Rabal and Gokul, right? You can walk, I think it's about a half hour walk between Rabal and Gokul. I've been to both of the places. Anyone here ever been to Rabal except for me? No one here. You should go there. It's a very secluded place. It's not like one of these places where you got thousands of pandas making money from you. But you go there, and it's very sweet, and they have pictures. I have pictures in, and I could show, you know, my computer. They have pictures of Radharani crawling around as a little baby there. Anyone seen the pictures I had when I went there? No. I think Radharani had been there. She knows. She's seen it. Isn't it nice there? Very sweet atmosphere. It's not a tourist place. Whereas you go to Gokul, that's a tourist place. You go to Gokul, and they have in the main temple. We went to Gokul, and Dinabandhu refused to go in the temple with us. The reason he did is because you get attacked by all these people. There's altars every 10 feet. And every 10 feet, there's not only an altar with Krishna and Mother Yashoda and someone else there, but there's also a panda asking for money. So what I did is I just sort of ran through the whole temple before they could catch me. Because Dinabandhu would warn me about it. Dinabandhu is our, you know, very expert godbrother who takes people around Braj. So I just went through the right through the temple, and the panda said, "What happened? We didn't get him. We didn't get him. You know, no donations." Whereas some of the devotees with me, they did get caught, isn't it? By the pandas, and they had to give money. And if you don't give money to the pandas, they curse you sometimes. It's interesting. You go to a holy place in Braj, and the pandas will automatically do a puja for you, even though you've never asked them to do it. They all of a sudden start doing it. They say, "Hey, I didn't ask you. You know, you're giving me the flowers offering." And then after that, they say, "All right, donation." And you say, "Well, 50 rupees," and then they start to curse you. So it's a little dangerous. So anyway, so Radharani, getting back to the story, Radharani and Rahu, Krishna and Gokul, then when they discovered there were a lot of demons there, they thought, we'll get rid of the demons by moving. That's also interesting because as they moved, they kept having trouble with demons. It's not that they got rid of the demons just by moving from one place in Gokul to another, or one place in Braj to another. So then they crossed, there's a whole story, wonderful story about how they crossed the river, the Jamuna River. At that time, the Jamuna River was not blocked up above Delhi. It didn't have any, you know, like sewage water in it or anything like that. So they crossed the Jamuna, and the cows swam across. Very interesting story about how they crossed the river. Then they went to Vrindavan. Then they also discovered a lot of demons there. In Vrindavan. And then, after Vrindavan, then they went to Nandagram and Barshana. So that's like the third step, Nandagram and Barshana. And of course, Barshana is Radharani's parents' place. But generally, at that point, after Radharani got married, she was mostly living with Abhimanyu, and not really living with him. He never came close to her. But at least in the same house, there is Jatila and Kutila. And it's called Yavat. Anyone here been to Yavat? You've been to Yavat. In Yavat, there's deities of Jatila and Kutila and Abhimanyu. And they are the ugliest deities I've ever seen in my life. I mean, they're just like, you'd be scared if you met them in a dark alleyway. So that's Yavat, where Radharani lived during the final portion of the Raj pastimes, because she was married. So, Barshana is a very holy place, very wonderful place, but I'm saying that there's many places that are equally associated with Srimati Radharani, particularly Ravel, that are not quite as famous. Does everyone understand the point? So Radharani appeared in Ravel, and of course, the Rasa-lila pastimes didn't occur in the beginning, although her natural attraction to Krishna was there. And she and the other gopis had their intimate relationship with Krishna after Krishna had done this pastime of stealing the clothes of the gopis. Because what happened is the gopis and Radharani were executing this Katyayani Vrat. Katyayani is, of course, Durga, the expansion of Durga. And the girls, they do this, they generally, Havishyana, they generally like unspiced food and everything like that during this period of time to get a good husband. So those of you who want good husbands, you should do that. I remember one girl did it and she got a husband right away.
Yeah.
That was Adi Lila.
Yeah.
So I said, how did that husband come? Right on the internet. So, so the gopis, they would perform this ceremony, and they would do these special austerities. And of course, bathing. They would bathe. It was the cold time of the year, so they would bathe in the Jamuna every morning, in spite of it being freezing. And so they executed that vow. At the end of the vow, they entered into the Jamuna for the final bath. And during that time, when they were finishing up the vow, Krishna stole their clothes. And he put them all up on the tree. And, of course, they were quite embarrassed. You know, they were looking for their clothes, and they looked and they saw this rascal up on the tree laughing at them. And Krishna said, you know, you've committed a great offense. You've gone bathing, you know, without the proper attire in the Jamuna. So you have to come out and offer obeisances, you know, rectify this offense. And so, anyway, the gopis, he made them come out. First, they tried to cover themselves with it. They had very long hair, so they tried to cover themselves. And Krishna said, this is an offense to have hair all over the place. Put your hair back. And then they tried to cover themselves with the hands, and Krishna said, you know, like, something like the hands, put your hands up, put your hand on your head like that. And so, in this way, it's understood that that was the marriage between Krishna